Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Peace Alliance monthly call for the month of July. If you can hear me okay, please give me a little wave. All right, great. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and it's a pleasure to have you all with us. I really appreciate you joining us on this Tuesday evening. This is different for us. This is the first time we're using this Zoom platform for our monthly call. So those of you for whom this is new, you can activate your camera if you like. If you have a camera on your computer or on your smartphone, you can activate it if you want to be seen, or you don't have to. You can keep it off and we'll see your name. And I'll be able to call on you if you have a question or something to say. You can raise your hand. There's a control on your screen that allows you to raise your hand. Those of you who are calling in from a telephone, not from a smartphone or from not using the Zoom app, you'll be able to raise your hand also by toggling *9. So bear with us. There may be a few little wrinkles, rumples as we work through this new technology, but I think we'll get it worked out. One thing I want to mention is usually in the past, we've sent an action sheet as an attachment to all the folks who'd registered for the call. We didn't have that available tonight. So far, I've pasted the text of the action sheet on the last confirmation that you received for this call. So if you check your email, the last confirmation email that you received for this call should have the text of our action sheet for tonight, okay? This is I'm very excited about this call. It's gonna have two distinct parts to it. The first half is gonna focus more on sort of an internal healing process. And we're going to be learning about some internal healings, addressing some personal trauma, and then we're going to have a guided meditation. And in the second half of our call, we're going to be talking about more of a healing social harms, looking at some of the history of racially oriented violence and killing and other forms of oppression and ways that we can address that through our own personal actions. So two distinct parts to the call. And there will be an opportunity for folks to share from the field if there's stuff happening in your lives and your work. That'll happen later in the call. And we're also going to hear an update from Nancy Merritt of the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. So that's sort of the overview of our call. It's such a complex topic, both of those things. It seems strange to brush over them in so few words. I just want to credit all of us, I guess, all of you, for approaching this together. I think even thinking about the history of lynching in this country and is enough to make probably all of us cringe and want to walk away from the subject more than walking towards it. So being willing to look at what has happened in this country and try to find some way to address our history in a way that is healing and awareness building and builds a more promising future. As we move forward. For now, I'm going to introduce Ngozi Akosia, who is going to introduce our first special guest speaker, Nancy Shapiro. For those of you who are new to the Peace Alliance maps out the world of peace building into what we think of as five cornerstones. And those cornerstones, as we've identified them, are cultivating personal peace, teaching peace in schools, empowering community peace building, humanizing justice systems, and fostering international peace building. So within each of those areas, primarily the last four, more than the cultivating personal peace building, but in each of those last four, we identify policies and programs that are doing this work. In the cultivating personal peace building cornerstone, it's trickier to find a policy on a governmental level that's going to promote inner peace, although they're out there. There are policies that allow more space for mindfulness and meditation and inner peace practices. So that being said, Ngozi is our leadership council lead for the cornerstone of cultivating personal peace building. So she partnered with me to arrange this call, and it's been my pleasure, as always, to cooperate with her. And I'm going to let her take it away to introduce our first special guest speaker. Welcome, Ngozi.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate that. It is my great pleasure to introduce to you today Nancy G. Shapiro. She advocates calm as a professional certified coach. She's an author, a blogger, and a workshop leader. Her expertise is supporting people through the inevitable shifts of personal and professional transitions while celebrating their resiliency, spirit, and wisdom. Nancy lives with her husband in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico. I think I said that right, Nancy. If I didn't, help me out when you get on the call. Nancy's work and her book focuses on embracing our old stories, and in that embracing, letting go of what no longer is beneficial and recognizing the gifts within those stories and a lifetime of experience. So owning our own wisdom. And she sees that as a personal process of truth and reconciliation within oneself. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Nancy Shapiro.
Thank you for your introduction, Ngozi. Nice to see you. I appreciate this opportunity to be a part of tonight's call. And it is certainly not any new news that we live in a turbulent world. I'm speaking to you as the author of The Book of Calm, Clarity, Compassion, and Choice in a Turbulent World. And so as an author about cultivating personal peace, I'm also a person who used to have a turbulent brain. So I was reactive, I was blaming and reacted to the slightest change around me. And so right now I'm sort of laughing to myself. I'm remembering that old self now, and I know how easily it can appear when calm veers too close to chaos. And my husband and I just sold our home in San Miguel de Allende, and we're traveling with our truck and small camper for a 5-month sabbatical. And after all the work I've done, all the practice, and writing a book about it, I can't begin to tell you about all of my turbulent moments that have popped up during the last 6 weeks. Because in truth, it's hard living in this particularly chaotic time in history, along with whatever is unruly or unexpected happening in your personal life. And so when Terry and Ngozi asked me to speak on inner peace, what came to me to share is that the practice of calm is everything but easy. It's constant and it's worth it. And so my personal experience of calm and my work as a life coach and writer is around identifying the old stories that we carry and belief, because they have gone into our bodies, into ourselves. And the work is the uncomfortable and honest reconciliation of all of our conflicting parts. And that is reflected out in the world, of course. So out of this practice, reaction can transform into clarity and blame into compassion, confusion into choice, wiser choices. And as our presence becomes calmer, it ripples out and touches those around us. And that expanded calm then ripples out into the world. So what I say in the book is, it's one person, one community, one person, one family, one community at a time. And as a client has said to me, each of us is a vessel for this work. And he went on to say it was his duty to do this work, his duty, for by being fully who he is able to be of service to the world. So the Peace Alliance and the individuals like you are representatives of service to the world. And I'd like to share 3 tools and a poem that may help you and others who are listening to step beyond any fears, doubts, and confusion while you explore your own stories and listen to the stories of others. And the first one is, remember the Spanish saying, cada cabeza es un mundo. Each head is a world. And there is no one way to think, speak, or do anything, because there are 7.6 billion people on the planet. right now. And when one understands that and begins to even grasp that huge number, there can be that one spark of understanding or insight between two or more people that lights the way through the stubborn, murky, ancient stories that we all carry. And those stories can be from our families. They can come from our peers, from our workplace, from cultural, political, religious programming, and in our bodies. They're in our bodies, so it's difficult. And the more, if you want to delve deeper into this, my book talks about the role of our brain and how it tends to go toward the negative and hang on to those stories, yet how when we work to break those bonds of the old stories, we grow new neural pathways and we start to change. Things change. And I'm living proof of that. The other tool is practice using yes and in your conversations with yourself and others. It's from what's that? Improv theater. And you can use it when negativity starts to weigh you down, like everything looks bleak that day. But feel how acknowledging that the positives, the negatives, and everything else is all happening around you at the same time. Feel how acknowledging that changes your perspective, your gratitude, and your physical, mental, and emotional energy. It is amazing. And the third one is be aware of how you connect with others through the words you use. Studying nonviolent communication is a wonderful way to introduce oneself to that. The tone in your voice can be devastating to someone, even though you don't know it, because it reminds them of a grandparent or a teacher or somebody. So watch your tone. And also how you listen to others. And often less talking and more listening creates the connection and collaboration that is needed in this kind of work. And be kind, be curious, and ask questions that move people and yourself toward possibility. Because all of these things also apply when listening and speaking to yourself. Because we are great ones to just badmouth ourselves. Yes. And when we start with ourselves, it can change everything. And the poem I'd like to read is called Communion. It closes the Book of Calm. And it's a poem that I say was downloaded to me from the universe. It came all in one piece. And I've tried to edit it, but it didn't want to be edited. So here it is for all of you. Communion. There is a bowl. Stories gather within its unsounded depths, even as the bowl sits in the curve of your palm. Tales once pebble-sized, now grown into stones, sly ones that enter without your knowing. There is a bowl filled with the water of compassion. This is the same bowl. It brims over crying when the stories jostle against one another. In its brimming, the bowl asks only this: make room. Make space between the words where consequence and compassion may sit in communion. Everything rests on the holding of the bowl. So thank you for letting me share these things. And I'm anxious to hear what else going to be said today. Thank you.
Wonderful, Nancy. Thank you so much. We'd like to have a little space for folks to have questions for you, if that's okay, for okay. A few minutes. Yeah, so if anyone has, there was a hand up at the very beginning of the call, and I'm assuming that may have been may have been by accident, or I'm not sure if it was about what you were about the topic. So I've lowered hands that were up before. So at this point, if you have a question or want to enter into discussion about anything that Nancy brought up, you can go ahead and raise your hand and I will see it and unmute your phone. While we're waiting for folks to maybe find that hand raising. I see Lori has her hand up. Go ahead, Lori, what's on your mind?
Oh, I just would like to request Nancy to share the poem with us if she's willing. I'd like to send that to the attendees.
Oh, of course, yes.
That's no I really problem. Enjoyed it.
Okay, so should I just send it to Dan and he'll get
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. Dan and I work together and I can send it to the folks on the call.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Great.
Thank you. And I see Terry also has her hand up. Terry Mason is one of our board presidents. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Hi, Nancy. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Terry.
Dan, first, when I finish asking my question, I want you to remind the people on the phone how they can raise their hands.
Thank you.
But Nancy, I so appreciate your being here, and I appreciate your grounded energy for all of us, as you say, in these turbulent times. And this is a real specific kind of action question, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot. But I'm just wondering, when you are triggered by something in the news or something in the world, if something happens that hits you and triggers you, what is your first response to calm that trigger?
Oh, I either turn off the news or walk out of the room, or I go outside. Nature is my biggest, my best friend, my church, I look for beauty in whatever way I can. And if I do get activated, I also go and write, you know, I just sit down and write. Like I wrote the Compassionate Power chapter of the Book of Calm. I had started writing it during the campaign and the day after the election. Instead of staying in bed like a lot of my friends did, I got up and I got fierce in the chapter around that subject of power not being only some creme de la creme of the human race, supposedly, but the power of conversation with every man, woman, and child in the street, at work, wherever. And I truly believe that, and we just saw that happen several times over the past several months, you know, with everything that's been going on. The immigration, the Me Too, the shootings, voices count. And so my voice is best in writing. I'll tell you, I'm very nervous talking here, but it's worth it. And so those are my ways. Writing, nature, removing myself from the button that activated me, and doing something that's good. Oh, an exercise or walking or the dogs or, you know, sort of doing a 180-degree turn.
I'm really grateful for you being courageous enough to step into that to share. And I just say I've been aware of your writing for a long time, and I'm grateful for your writing, especially your poetry. I always find it very calming and empowering. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Terry. And it's so wonderful to see you. I don't know when we last saw each other, but
here's years. I don't know either.
Right. So thank you. Great question.
Thanks, Terry. So thanks for the prompt, Terry. Folks who have dialed in without using the Zoom app can raise their hand by pressing *9. Okay. And for future reference, the Zoom app doesn't cost anything. It's free to download. If you have a smartphone device or computer with internet access, you can use that app in the future if you like for a little more features. I see a raised hand from Tara Celeste. Tara, go ahead. You're unmuted.
Hi. I'm just curious how you interact online, like with social media, just kind of speaking of triggers and closing down the news, but just, you know, social media being a place where writers can write, even if just single thoughts or really quick pieces. So if you can maybe comment on how you respond through writing through social media platforms, especially that's such a part of this current administration too. Thanks.
Right. Thank you. That's an amazing question and a difficult one for me even to think about, because the social media aspect of being an author these days was more difficult than finishing the book after 10 years. So it took a lot out of me and a lot of me to enter that realm. And yet I just kept calm as my focus. So it could be anything from a poem, a line in a poem, to a picture of my dogs, to a picture of my family, to speaking about my mother's Alzheimer's, to connecting with people, and not just me posting, but me interacting with others who are on social media to show, yes, somebody is aware of what you say, someone is connecting with you, because that is ultimately or perhaps in the beginning what social media was about, and yet it seems to be diverting from that in a way. So I keep focusing on calm. I just keep focusing on it. If I read a good book, like I just read A Far Off Place by Laurens Vanderpost, and he speaks to all of this within a story about four people wandering across a desert in Africa. And it's truly, so I put out quotes, a lot of pictures of nature, just, and people understand that I'm coming from calm. So, yeah. And some days when I really get upset, I'll say somehow how to handle being upset or being activated. But I do it from my place of being a coach and from the book. I just stay focused in that way. So I hope that helps.
Yeah. So, thank you, Tara, and thank you, Nancy. We're out of time for questions now. We've got a very packed agenda, and I hope you will stay with us for as long as feels right for the remainder of the call. You're welcome to stay, of course, and if you have someplace else you need to be, we understand. We have a segue, as it were, into the second half of the call, which is a guided meditation that Ngozi is going to offer. So if you want to make yourself comfortable, I'm going to hand this over to Ngozi for this next section. It'll be about 4 minutes or so. So here you go, Ngozi.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. Thank you, everyone, for participating today. And so just to get us settled in, just whatever you're doing, just allow yourself to just become centered wherever you are. You might want to have, just for the sake of convenience, a piece of paper and something to write with, because there will be a time where that will be necessary if you so choose it. So we're going to take a moment for those of you who feel comfortable enough to close your eyes and just get really comfortable, get really still. And just allow yourself to be very present in your body, just feeling your feet, feeling the energy that's moving from your feet, whether it's coming from your feet and going upward or whether it's coming from your head going downward towards your feet, just allowing yourself to be totally present to being in this now moment. And as we continue, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. And these questions are for you to contemplate within your mind and just allow for yourself. You don't have to make anything up. So if nothing comes up for you, that's okay. Just be really present with yourself. So the first question is going to be, what traumatic experience do you need to heal today? And the question for yourself is, what traumatic experience do I need to heal today? And simply wait for a response. Observe your body. See if anything shows up, any energetic expression, any feelings, thoughts, any painful memories or a sense of being sadness. Just notice yourself in this now moment. And if you feel comfortable in this moment right now, just write down a few of your observations, the things that resonated the most with you in that moment, just a few. And if you're able to move forward at this time and you've written things down and come back to yourself, come back to closing your eyes, come back to being comfortable inside your body, come back to this now present moment. Allow yourself to just be present. Now that you've identified your areas of trauma or possible experience of discomfort, and the next question is, ask yourself, are you ready to heal this area of your life? Just really be present with whatever shows up for you in this moment. Now I would like for us to just take a moment, and what we're going to do is we're going to take a deep inhalation and we're just going to allow for that full diaphragmic experience, so that belly button pushing all the way out, just taking that full breath, and then we're going to hold it for about 3 seconds. And while we're holding it, within your mind, you're going to say, I forgive myself, and whatever that is you're ready to release, that's what you're going to forgive yourself with. And then when we do the exhale, you're going to release the breath slowly and state the following in your mind, I release myself. And so we'll do that 3 times, whatever that is. It could be the same thing or it could be a different thing every time you do it. It's totally up to you. This is your process. This is your individual opportunity to invite yourself to a deeper healing. So taking a deep breath inward, holding it for 3 seconds. Within your mind, I forgive myself. Releasing slowly and stating in your mind as you're in the release, I release myself from this, whatever that is for you. And just take a moment and do that 3 more times. So we're taking a deep breath now. Holding for 3 seconds. In your mind, I forgive myself. Now releasing the breath slowly, I release myself. One more time, inhalation. Holding 3 seconds. Releasing slowly. And now with your eyes closed, just taking a gentle moment to be very present, very calm, very available to yourself. Just acknowledge this affirmation. So I'm going to read it out loud and I'll read it again and we'll read it while you're closing your eyes and I'm going to read it 3 times, but you repeat it in your mind as it shows up for you. I am worthy of love, compassion, and kindness. I am worthy of love, compassion, and kindness. I am worthy of love, compassion, and kindness. Just releasing that affirmation, allowing it to vibrate, to be your expression of this now moment as you carry it through, as you continue your evening, as we continue this call. Remember, you can always come back to this affirmation at any time. And you can now open your eyes. And this segment is now complete.
Thank you so much, Ngozi. And thanks to all who have contributed with your hearts and thoughts and actions to keep this community together to this point. I'm feeling grateful for being part of this community, this group, in this moment to have this experience. So I wanted to appreciate all the folks who are here on this call that you're contributing to that right now. So prepare yourself however you like. I don't think you need to get too guarded, but we're going to change gears. Many of you may be aware that in April, a new National Peace and Justice Museum and Legacy Memorial, National Peace and Justice Memorial and Legacy Museum opened in Montgomery, Alabama. And it's colloquially called the Lynching Memorial. And it was an initiative largely founded and supported by the Equal Justice Initiative, EJI. Many of you may be familiar with EJI because of the work of Bryan Stevenson, who's a wonderful author. And I think I have his book right there. There it is, Just Mercy. And lawyer representing death row inmates and working to reduce incarceration. He's done amazing work. If you're not familiar with Bryan Stevenson, I highly recommend taking a look. So this memorial and museum in Montgomery, Alabama, is a way to raise awareness and understanding and healing, ultimately, regarding the history in the United States of racially motivated violence, lynching in particular, but there are other forms of violence and oppression that have gone along with our history. And it's a powerful place. I haven't been there yet, but our next guest has been there. Randall Gamble was there at the opening of the museum. And I want to let you know about this museum. They have metal plaques there, one metal plaque for each of the counties in the United States where there have been racially motivated lynchings. And there are some 800 and something, 815 counties where those have been documented. So there are actually two copies of each of these plaques at the memorial. There's one copy that's in an orderly setting all together with the other ones. And then over several acres spread out surrounding that central exhibit or installation, there are replicas of those plaques, which each county has the opportunity to claim as part of a truth and reconciliation process. So in other words, I've recently learned that Alachua County here in Florida, where I lived for about 9 years, there are two county commissioners on the County Commission of Alachua County, Florida, that are taking steps to initiate a truth and reconciliation process around the county's history of racial violence, which to their count includes 43 lynchings, along with other forms of violence, on down and including predatory lending practices, discriminatory banking practices, discriminatory arrests and incarceration practices. So there's a lot for folks all over this country to try to come to terms with through awareness and steps to heal. And our next guest, Randall Gamble, has been active in healing peace and justice movements for over 20 years with organizations such as the Mid-South Peace and Justice Council, with the M.K. Gandhi Institute on Nonviolence, with Pax Christi USA and International, with Campaign Nonviolence, with an organization called Coming to the Table, which in your materials on your action sheet, you have a link to coming to the table as well as to the EJI's memorial. And that is a website and an organization which focuses specifically on different forms that reparations for slavery, reparations for racial violence, and that can be on an individual level as well as a collective level. To my understanding, Randy, as he has become known to me, has been most active or particularly active lately in the Lynching Sites Project in Memphis, Tennessee, which was founded even before the Montgomery Memorial and Museum was opened, and it was inspired. He may share some of this. I'm sorry if I'm taking away some of your storyline, Randy, but apparently it was inspired by hearing Bryan Stevenson talking about these matters. So I'm going to go ahead and find you on our list so that I can unmute you and give you a very warm welcome to the call. Randy, thank you so much for joining us. You should be unmuted now.
Hey, yeah, thank you, Dan. And Nicosi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, I appreciate it. As I was listening to Nancy and this from Nicosi, or whatever it is, right, my heart started beating because doing this work of racial violence and confronting the legacy of lynching is quite emotional for me as an African-American man. But I think about my journey of all, you know, being involved in the peace movement for over 20 years and, you know, being taught nonviolence, whatever it is, right, that has allowed me to actually be where I'm at to do the work of confronting racial violence, because it's not easy to hear about, you know, black men that have been lynched or women been lynched, as well as, you know, hearing about black men dying. I'm here through the police or whatever it is, right? But because of my journey, you know, through peacemaking has helped me, you know, not so much to remain calm, but to be able, I guess, to be at peace, I mean, with myself in terms of confronting racial violence. But anyway, just to give you a little bit of background, I grew up in Oakland, California, joined the military, spent 20 years in the Navy, retired, got involved in the peace movement while I was in the military. So you're talking about some needing some calm. I mean, that was a conflict. But anyway, in 2006, I went up to a peace conference in Milwaukee, and I heard about the American Black Holocaust Museum. It was established by Dr. James Cameron. I don't know if you heard of that name, but he established the American Black Holocaust Museum because he was the only known survivor of a lynching that happened in 1930. And he lived long enough to tell his story. I mean, he wrote a book called A Time of Terror. And I was just amazed by discovering that. And that was the beginning of me starting, you know, to really start doing research around lynching. And then in 2010, you heard Dan speak about coming to the table. Coming to the table is a descendants of slave owners, slave traders, and slaves who have come together in the spirit of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. Well, 2008, I went there, I mean, you know, to Eastern Midnight University, you know, where they had a workshop for 5 days. And then in 2010, they had a workshop at Tougaloo College in Jackson, Mississippi, which I went to. And while I was there, I met an older white woman who was writing a book called A Family Tree. It hadn't come out yet. Her name is Karen Braden. And she looked at me and she said, Randy, my spirit is telling me and you are connected somehow. Well, I started getting the shakes a little bit then. But anyway, her family had lynched four blacks in 1912 in Georgia. So that was a second encounter. The third encounter, as I was I'm Catholic, so I was at a Catholic church, St. Peter's in Memphis, and I was going through a march for children called the Two Martins. And there was a white woman that came up to me. We started having conversations about race relations. She talked to me. She said, I'd like you to comment on a report that I made. I said, that's interesting, right? The report that she made was on a lynching that took place in 1917, which was El Paso. And she was taking a class at the Memphis Theological Seminary on the cross and the lynching tree. So I said, this is quite interesting. This is the third time, so, you know, I mean, this has happened. Well, the fourth time is in 2015, EJI, Equal Justice Initiative, came out a report, Lynching in America, Confronting the Legacy of Racial Terror. And I heard about it. The report is free. I downloaded it, got a copy of it, or whatever it is, right? And then later on, Bryan Stevenson, through Face History and Ourselves, they had a banquet in November. And so there were over several hundred people there. you know, made, that Brian Stevenson spoke to. But there was four things that Brian Stevenson spoke about, which was very pivotal in terms of doing this racial justice work. One is, he said, you have to be proximate. You have to get close to do this work. The second is, you got to change the narrative, because the narrative was actually established by the dominant culture. The third thing is, doing this work, you got to stay hopeful, because sometimes, you know, it's pretty tough. And the fourth is, you got to be willing to be uncomfortable, because to do this work is not easy. It doesn't make you feel comfortable. But anyway, there were several people that actually attended the, you know, the banquet or whatever it is, right? And they started talking, you know, kind of discerning, you know, they had, you know, we had a minister and his wife and the lawyer, you know, discerning, you know, from the church, you know, where do we go from here? So what happened is, and they decided, you know, they wanted it to reach out to the community. So they held a meeting at a church and kind of brainstormed, you know, different ideas of what to do. But what came out of that meeting, this was in 2015, was they decided to have an interfaith prayer service for truth. And it was held downtown Memphis at the former Nathan Bedford Ford's home, which at the same time was also a slave jail. And so we had an interfaith prayer service for truth there, and we called out loud all the names of the lynching victim. And the reason why is because Memphis had the highest lynching in the state of Tennessee. And so after we did that, you know, we had the prayer service. We had about 150 people. We started having meetings, you know, doing listening circles in the community, because we didn't want it to be just maybe six or seven people doing this work. We wanted it to be a community thing. And so we had meetings at three different churches, you know, just to brainstorm, you know, and bring people together, you know, to talk about, you know, this very sensitive subject. So we did that. And then in 2016, we were blessed to have a retired criminology professor from the University of Memphis, Dr. Margaret Van Diver. She actually wrote a book called Lethal Punishment. And she did a lot of the research around lynching in Memphis and Tennessee, where it is, right? So, you know, I was a part of the research committee, and so that was a good thing. We had another retired English professor who did a lot of writing in terms of writing articles, you know, for the media, where it is, and stuff like that. So as we started brainstorming, you know, to try to figure out how to do this work, we had heard that there was a high school, Overton High School, where the juniors were actually working on something that we found out about. And what it was is, Facing History and Ourself had a teacher who was alumni. She took the curriculum or where it is, right? And she challenged the students, these were juniors in 2015, to do a project. Well, the juniors decided to do a project, and that project was on a lynching that took place in 1917. And what's really inspired in terms of young people is that they not only did the research on the lynching of the real person, but they also did fundraising so they can create a historical marker, which is interesting because that was dedicated last year. But they also created what they call SOMS, which is Students United Memphians, to actually be able to tell the story to other high school kids. So it was very fascinating. And then we started meeting more and talking, you know, about different things. We met with Facing History and Ourselves, you know, to talk with the, you know, the youth, because there were five things that we wanted to focus on. One was media. The other one was the commemoration. The other one was research, youth, and art and theater, because we wanted to reach out to the community and see what they were thinking. So 2016 was really a time that we were actually growing. We didn't have a board. We only had $6,000, stuff like that. A lot of the money came from people who donated and stuff like that. And so we just, you know, and then Brian Stevenson, he came last in 2016, because Memphis had what they called the Memphis Massacre Symposium. And this happened to do with the 1866 massacre that happened here in Memphis. So Brian Stevenson came and spoke at the National Civil Rights Museum, because they were actually doing a historical marker. So we went there, and he had some of the people from EJI, his staff, that were actually there. And we got a chance afterwards, you know, after the meeting at the Civil Rights Museum, before they did the historical marker, we got a chance to sit down with two of the women from EJI and kind of talk with them. They heard about Memphis and the work that we're doing. So that was wonderful. But from that gathering is where we heard of an individual who's our executive director today. There was a lawyer named Jim Emerson, and he had recommended this individual named Don Ashworth, who's our executive director today, who lives in Brownsville, Tennessee. And he was the chairperson of the commemoration of lynching that took place in Brownsville with, you know, with a guy by the name of Williams, you know, that was an NAACP that got lynched. And so we actually hired him later on as a project manager because we were gearing up for 100th anniversary of a lynching that took place in 1917. And the reason why that lynching was so important is because in 1917, that lynching of L. Person is what started the NAACP. And the reason why I say that, because James Weldon Johnson knew Robert Church, who lived in Memphis, and he contacted him, and he came to Memphis, to the actual site where L. Person was actually burned. And he wrote in his report, which is the crisis where it is, right, the last paragraph is so powerful. It said, to save the bodies of black folks and to save the souls of white folks. Very powerful where it is, right? And so we started, you know, just meeting with many other people. Brian came back, and we went to a lawyer luncheon. We had all the lawyers that were there, and he spoke to them and stuff like that, right? And we got a chance a little bit to talk with him. And then we were working with theaters, you know, that actually did a play called Strange Fruit. You know, that was a song, you know, created by Billie Holiday or whatever it is, or sang by her, whatever it is, right? Well, we worked with the theater, Memphis Symphony Orchestra, or whatever it is, and they gave us an opportunity to actually have a pre-planning discussion before the actual play. So we got a chance to, you know, to have people on the panel, you know, from the Lynching Site Project, and to talk with the audience and you know, and the questions with the audience and everything. And it was wonderful. Then, of course, we went to the play. And then we did an interfaith prayer service last year in 1917, about 5,000 people. They call it, you know, a festival, whatever it is. But last year, we had 521 people that were present. And we had a descendant of the black man who was lynched, but also there was a young lady named Antoinette Repel. She was about 15, 16 year old high school young lady that had got raped and killed. But we also had a descendant on her side because we wanted to make sure that there was two, you know, pretty much two homicides, you know, in terms of, you know, the black man who got lynched and the young lady. So we had both of the descendants together, and I sat back because being ex-military, I was watching everybody, you know, for safety and security and stuff like that. And I'm looking at these two young ladies at the site, and they both had tears in their eyes at the same time. Amazing transformation, I mean, in terms of what happened, stuff like that. But anyway, we've been involved with speaking at different places. We have a lot of people who have come here this year for the Martin Luther King 50th anniversary. They're coming from a lot of campuses, you know, college campuses, whatever it is, right? You know, and they heard about us. You know, we usually do things in pairs. We have maybe a black person and a white person. We speak together because there's two different perspectives, and I think that's important. Mm-hmm. And then we had, what was amazing is last year we had a guy who passed away this year, not too long ago. His name was Charlie Morris. He was 98 years old. But anyway, his brother, Jesse Lee Bond, was lynched in 1939. And I remember what Charlie Morris said. He said when his brother got lynched in 1939, he said he spent 9 years angry. He hated white people, whoever it is, right? But for some reason, you know, I mean, after 9 years, he went to the Bible. For some reason, he opened it up and said, vengeance is mine, and that changed him. Well, anyway, he spoke at the General Assembly in Nashville, you know, about, because they were looking at a bill, and that bill was called the Civil Rights Code Case Act of 2007, HB 1306, which is quite interesting. We went to Nashville, the organizing committee, you know, to be present, you know, with the NAACP, Southern Poverty Law Center, a lot of the attorneys and stuff like that. But that bill got passed. And so we're still, you know, I mean, there's a law office up there that's taking the lead. So that's quite interesting. Because we had a state representative who's a former NAACP executive director. She was pushing it, you know, for years and stuff like that. So that was quite interesting. But when we first started off in 2015, there was only maybe about six or seven of us. And as we started, you know, growing and meeting and, you know, strategizing and planning and stuff like that, we started getting some wonderful people. I mean, people were interested in history, people interested in trauma, people interested in listening circle, people interested in all kinds of different things, or whatever it is, right? Because this is not easy. This is not an issue or a subject that people can talk about, because when you go out into the community, there are some people that don't want to talk about it because it's too emotional. you know, to talk about, whatever it is. But we find from doing the work is that, you know, you have to allow people to be where they are in terms of dealing with, you know, racial violence, because to some people, that racial violence is still happening today. The past is really not the past. I mean, it's still happening in the present because of the, we call it the legacy of slavery, about what has happened. We're still dealing with that after effect and stuff like that. But anyway, Montgomery, I went down there. Reverend Tom Mumber, he's a retired Episcopal priest. He couldn't be on the call. He wanted to be, but something came up. We went down there together to Montgomery, to the Legacy Museum, as well as the Memorial for Peace and Justice. That was both, it filled me with gladness and it filled me with sadness. One is, as I went to the Legacy Museum, and you go in and you go through a tunnel, which is dark, and you get to, you know, inside the actual museum, I stopped at the strip. And the strip was the last word of a lynching that took place in 1892 here, which actually called the People's Ministry, that actually started Ida B. Wells on her anti-lynching crusade. But anyway, it was the last words of Thomas Moss. And the last word of Thomas Moss was, you know, go west, because there's no justice here. And that was on a strip. And I was talking to people about it, you know, and sharing with them and stuff like that about, you know, I mean, about that history. Because last year we did the 125th anniversary working with the Downtown Clergy Association, you know, to do that 100th anniversary of the People's Grocery. But as I was going around the, the Legacy Museum from slavery to incarceration, I just shook my head. I just kept shaking my head. I met a Jewish woman who's an attorney in Washington, D.C., and she kept saying, are there any Jewish people that are doing this work? And, of course, I remember Leo Frank, a Jewish guy that had been lynched, but also had been lynched in a northern part of Tennessee. So I shared that with her and met some wonderful people, you know, that wanted to talk. People really wanted to talk. So anyway, we walked from the Legacy Museum, you know, after we had, you know, after we had lunch, and walked up to the memorial. I got up there. The columns, man. I mean, you're looking at them, and then you're walking down, and the columns go up. It gave me a headache, but I was okay because I was talking to some young people about, you know, Shelby County and a couple of other places, Elaine, Elaine, Arkansas, and a lot of other places. But what really got me was when I went outside and saw the 805 columns looked like. They looked like coffins. That's what hit me. Over 4,000 people that died. When I looked at them coffins, that's what they look like, the tombs or whatever it is, right? That really got me, whatever it is, right? And I said, wow, that many. And I looked at all the ones, of course, in Tennessee and stuff like that, over 50 of them, East, where lynching took place. But this work, to me, it's really about healing, knowing the truth, restoration, reconciliation, of course, you know, reparation, because I know there's a lot of talk around reparation, because I know Fannie Davis' sister, her name's, Angela Davis' sister is working on a National Truth Reconciliation Commission, but she's also working on a project called Truth Telling, Racial Healing, and Reparation. So I've been in contact with her. But I find that to do this work, you have to do it together in a way that's real, because you're going to need to hold each other up, and that's what we do. We have to hold each other up, because it is heavy. This is heavy. This history is heavy, and it still affects families even today, the community. I mean, up to this point, where it is, right? So I'm grateful for the opportunity of being able to just share just a little bit. And the reason why I know this history is because I was a secretary. That's why I wrote it. I mean, I wrote all this information, you know, down and stuff like that, right? But I met some wonderful people that are coming from many different perspectives that are, doing this work. And this is not an event. What happened in Montgomery was not an event. It's a movement. I've seen thousands of people, met all kinds of people that are doing, you know, this work. And that, to me, gives me hope, you know, I mean, around, you know, I mean, dealing with this, you know, legacy of confronting, you know, racial terror, which is lynching and stuff like that. But so I'm grateful, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Thank you so much, Randy. It's such a great gift that you've given us by joining us today. Really appreciate you being here with us.
Yes, thank you.
I wonder if anyone has any questions for Randy. You can find the hands up button, or if you are dialing in without the app, you can press star 9 to raise your hand, and I'll watch for your hand going up. You've given us a lot, Randy. If there are no questions at the moment, we can go ahead and start talking about this. Oh.
Nancy Shapiro has it.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Nancy, you're...
Hi, Randy. I am so moved and upset and hopeful hearing what you're talking about. I'm Jewish, and I know a friend of mine has written a book about all of the terror and the inherited trauma that goes down in generations, and the work you're doing is just so needed and so moving. Thank you. I was just wondering what let's just keep it to two. What two books would you recommend I read to learn more about this? I am ignorant.
There is so many resources on our website. We have all kinds of resources of books to read.
What's the name of the website then?
It's the lynching site with an S, men.org.
Okay.
There's one I would recommend that you see. And the reason why is because in 2002, there was an actual conference that was actually held at Emory University. It's called Without Sanctuary. I don't know if you heard that, but Without Sanctuary is it's the photograph of lynching of people.
All right. Yeah. I will read that. Thank you again. Bless you.
You're welcome.
So, I'm going to just sort of take executive privilege and extend this call sort of 5 minutes over because we've got a few other things to cover. And I just want to make sure we can squeeze at least a little bit of them in. It's now 3 minutes to the top of the hour. One thing I want to bring to your attention, as I mentioned, the text of the action sheet is in the last information that you all received. And this movement that Randy talked about is something that you are invited to join further. On the action sheet, there are on the first part of the action sheet is the text of the meditation that Ngozi shared. The second part of the action sheet are three steps that you can take to take a more active role in this movement of awareness and reconciliation, truth and reconciliation and healing. The three steps, just to sort of summarize, one is to continue to explore and learn. You can look on the site that Randy mentioned, lynchingsitemn.org, and there are also three resources that are on that reading that we've sent to all the folks that confirmed for the call. I'm going to plan to send the action sheet itself to all the folks whose email addresses I can grab from the registration page. But again, this is new technology to us, so we're figuring out how to do that smoothly. So one is continue to learn about this issue by exploring these materials. Two is to share this information and awareness about this movement with your networks, your social networks, both online and in person, partly to build alliances around the possibilities for advocacy, for meeting together, for doing some advocacy to perhaps your county commissioners, for creating some local awareness. And the third is actually make some direct contact with somebody at your county commission or county council that would have some say in taking on the process of truth and reconciliation, which is promoted by the Peace and Justice Memorial and Museum. So those three steps are outlined here. And I mention also in that step number three, you don't have to be in one of those counties, in one of those 805 counties where there were actual recorded lynchings in order to take some of this action. There are histories of racially oriented violence and killing throughout this country. So there's work to be mm-hmm. done in this area to uncover and come into some clarity and dialogue and healing, no matter where you are in this country. And so that was just sort of quick summary. I want to make time for Nancy to give us an update, because we've got advocacy days coming up this fall, and we've got some update time from the DOP. So for now, Randy, you're, again, as I mentioned to Nancy, you're more than welcome to stick with us for the rest of the call. And after we have a DOP update, maybe there'll be time for some more discussion, but I want to make sure to get to that. So thanks again so much. Let me find Nancy on our... Oh, one other thing I want to mention. This month, this action, this focus, this is not the beginning and the end. This is an introduction to this topic. We intend to pursue this in the coming months. We've got some other campaign goals at the Peace Alliance and in the lead up to the election season, so we'll be working on that as well. But we intend to return to this, support you, and coach you, and give you resources so that we can do this together. This project is too important to just devote a half hour on one call to. We're going to be in ongoing dialogue to try this on a larger scale. And you can email any of us, dan@peacealliance.org and gosi@peacealliance.org, to be in discussion about this. Let me find Nancy Merritt. Nancy Merritt, there you are. You are unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Nancy and Randall, and give a shout out to Randall from Oakland. And I know Fania Davis, so I'm really glad you're working. Your work is touching with her, so thank you so much. So what I want to talk about is we have several events coming up during around the International Day of Peace, September 21st. That are all these events are linked. We're participating, the Department of Peacebuilding folks have been invited to participate in the World Beyond War Conference in Toronto. And of course, if you can go, that's great. And if you can't, it will be live streaming. And the dates are September 21st and 22nd. And we'll be giving a workshop on departments and ministries of peace, along with the Canadian Campaign for a Ministry of Peace. And the theme of that event is legalizing peace. And you can find out a lot more on the World Beyond War conference, World Beyond War website. Then after that, folks are going to come to Washington, D.C. And there's also those same days, the 21st and 22nd, Pache Bene Campaign Nonviolence Convergence will be happening. And that will involve speakers and a march from the Martin Luther King Memorial to the Lafayette Park across the street from the White House. A lot of good speakers, and will the Department of Peacebuilding, Peace Alliance folks will be participating in that also. And then on the Sunday, we'll be going to the African American Museum, and Monday through Wednesday, so it'll be September 24th through 26th, we'll be participating in our advocacy days, which is something we've done for quite a number of years. We go to Capitol Hill, we make appointments with Congress people and senators to advocate for Department of Peace Building legislation and other peace building related legislation. And we'll be there. We would love to have you all come to any or all of those events. And there'll be, if the gods of eBlast cooperate, there'll be an eBlast out in the next day or so, listing all these and how you can register. If you can come to Washington for advocacy days, we'll train you, we'll go with you. Those who are experienced, we'll get others to go with you. And those who can't go, we're asking to participate from home by an action we call Amplify Our Voices. So we'll send out a list of congresspeople we would love for you to call while we're there. And that's really an effective thing to do because we've been there before when walked in to offices when other people are on the phone from, you know, Iowa or California or whatever. And it's pretty impressive when people are calling in and also visiting. So anyway, I really hope you can all come. This is our way of honoring International Day of Peace. And if you can't come to those events, we hope you participate in your local International Day of Peace events too.
Thank you, Nancy.
Yeah,
I did not give you much of an introduction, so I want to give you an outroduction, I guess. Nancy is also on our Leadership Council, and there's a council seat on the Leadership Council for the Department of Peacebuilding. Some of you are probably aware, some of you maybe not, that the Peace Alliance was formed with one policy goal in mind, and that was creation of a United States cabinet-level Department of Peace. And the name of the bill to create that department has changed from Department of Peace to Department of Peacebuilding. But the mission is more or less the same. It researches, identifies, and promotes the best available practices and programs for conflict resolution, cooperation, violence reduction at every level, from schools, neighborhoods, communities, and internationally. So basically to make peace building more well known and more available and more effective. And Nancy herself has been at this at least as long as I have in the context of the Peace Alliance, and that's 2004, 2005, is a real adept expert at lobbying Congress and organizing people nationwide on many levels. So if you have questions about any of that I just covered, Nancy at peacealliance.org. I'm sure she'll be thrilled to help you organize and advocate. So FYI, this call has been recorded. So if you're excited about it and want to share it, you'll be able to find it through our website. You can share it as a podcast and listen to it again on a road trip, share it with your friends. And I'm going to offer a closing quote and then unmute everybody so that we can all say goodnight or whatever else you want to say. And I'm going to close with one of my favorites, which is from Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." I'm extremely grateful to you all for joining us, and I look forward to seeing and hearing you all on future calls. You should all be unmuted now. Have a good night.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
And go to the EJI website.
Good night.
Yes. Yes, yes. Thanks for Andy.
So grateful. Thank you.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
So grateful.